Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. As always, excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning. You get to deal with me every Wednesday at 7 to 9 a.m. over here on KVOI. We're talking all things local related to Tucson, Arizona business and restaurant scene. Of course, lots of cool things happening. I was out of town the last couple days. I was actually in San Diego. I think probably half of Tucson was in San Diego. I was in Legoland over there, a fine culinary delight, truly a food mecca over there at Legoland. But we did get to check out a number of restaurants.
Pound to table plastic things that you step on.
Yes, very much so. I think that could have been one of the rides over there. The adults would have to walk across this.
And, right. Walking across a dark living room.
Right, with stacks of Legos. It was actually pretty impressive, though, Matt. There was, like, the things that they were able to build with Legos was shocking. I thought the whole thing was going to be quite the sham.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be a little more impressive than I thought.
All right.
But one of the reasons I love to travel, though, is to check out other cool restaurants, right? You get to go to other communities where they've got perhaps a more vibrant economy. Maybe a little bit more interesting restaurant scene where they're just doing new and great things. We love learning in the restaurant business from all of these other restaurateurs. There's very little of what we do every day, quite frankly, that's invented by me or my staff or just about anybody. With thousands and thousands of restaurants across the country, it's already been done in some capacity, and so I love to learn from them. But what I learned about Southern California that I already kind of knew but really got to see this weekend was just how many fees are tacked on the bottoms of these restaurant checks at this point. And and the nomenclature that they use for them varies wildly, right? There's the San Francisco healthcare mandate, right? A living wage mandate. But I got one just the other day at a really nice pizza place there in Southern California, in San Diego, that was called appreciation fee. Now, I didn't even see this one on the menu. And it kind of strikes me as
who's not, appreciation?
Right. Appreciation fee, right? It's like, who is being appreciated over here? And I look for the menu and I couldn't find the explanation on that. But sure enough, on the bottom of the check, it said the appreciation fee is for the appreciation of the back of house.
Yeah.
And this is a money that will be doled out 100% to the back of house employees to appreciate them for their hard work. Now, it didn't say back of house fee or anything, but on the check, it just said appreciation fee.
It also didn't say, would you like to add X number of dollars to your bill for the back of the house staff?
Correct. We weren't given a choice on that particular one. And there had been legislation in California, in fact, just late last year, that had worked its way through to make junk fees illegal. This happened on both a federal level. The FTC looked into this. We talked about this, I believe, on the show once or twice before. And the state of California mirrored the federal government's request to end, quote unquote, junk fees. The idea was to go after the ticket masters of the world, right? We've all experienced the buying the ticket for $69.99, and then it ends up costing $98.42, and you're like, what the heck?
Or the airplane ticket, and oh, you want a seat belt? Well, that's an extra $25.
Yeah. Well, that's the Spirit Airline model over here.
You want an oxygen mask to fall out when the plane suddenly depressurizes? That'll be an extra $50.
Right. There's a co-pilot appreciation fee or something like this on Spirit these days, right?
So sobriety appreciation fee.
Yeah, so there's so many options here. But really, like, these nomenclatures are starting to get a bit ridiculous. I'm for the private sector being able to pretty much do what you want to do and charge what you wish for in your business. But I also am for, like, a clear disclosure of what these things are and about. And when you start calling things appreciation fee, I think you're really starting to cross a line. But we do tend to mirror what happens in California, what happens in New York, right? I go to these cities, I check out these great restaurants, and sure enough, 5 years later, these things start to trickle their way into Tucson. I remember going to San Francisco with Katarina in, gosh, this must have been 2019, right? And just the amount of fentanyl craziness and homelessness that was going on the streets of San Francisco at that time was shocking to me. I hadn't been in nearly a decade, and it had really gone downhill. And I remember thinking to myself, gosh, I'm sure glad we're in Tucson. We don't have any fentanyl stuff like this happening over here. Like, I remember having those thoughts. And here we are, you know, nearly a decade later, and of course, we're replicating the exact nightmare that they're going through in San Francisco. And so I worry that we're going to replicate these sort of things as well, too, as we start to continue to have struggles in the restaurant business. We've got kind of a whopper of a show today, quite frankly.
There is
a number of restaurants going out of business here in Tucson. I had kind of called it happening in late May. It took till nearly late June to happen. But today we're announcing some of the bigger closures and changeovers that we've had in probably at least 6 months, if not a year. If you remember that day when Hi-Fi went down, right, and Hermanos sort of in the same 24-hour period, and that was a shock to the service industry. There's a number of closures, and we're going to talk about that at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, about just the grand list of places that are going out of business and turning over, because it is definitely high closure season right now. And part of this, of course, is the function of the minimum wage that we've been howling about in the restaurant business for the better portion of many years. But those chickens are finally coming home to roost over here, and you're seeing more and more struggles in the private sector on this one. Now, as we get into local Tucson-related news, we do try to track what these other cities are doing, because our city council in Tucson loves exactly the moves that they're doing in California. They love these moves that they're doing in New York, and often try to replicate these. And in the same way I look at food, and I can go to a New York restaurant and say, hey, I'd like to see what you're going to do on that cocktail menu. Because maybe, just maybe, we could replicate that in Tucson in some capacity. I also look at what these governments are doing, and I start thinking to myself, goodness gracious, like, this is what's going to be coming down the pipeline in Tucson. One only need to look at the mayor race last night in New York City, right, the Democrat primary. I recognize we're a Tucson-related local channel over here, but I'm going to get there. Like, one only need to look at the Democrat race to see, you know, the canary in the coal mine, and see this, you know, even further shift to the left, as Zohran Mamdani was elected as the Democratic nominee, beating Andrew Cuomo in New York. Now, those that don't follow Zohran Mamdani, and I get if you don't, because we're in the 5-2-0 over here, this is an ultra-progressive assemblyman out of Queens in New York that not only has been advocating for free buses in New York, a policy that they tried and essentially failed there too, by the way, but he's ready to bring on free buses, so we should give him a little trip to Tucson over here and show him how successful that has worked out here in the old Pueblo.
Check this out.
He's also advocating for government-run grocery stores. And I find this one to be probably most interesting.
You got my attention
and
now.
The most worrisome of all. Yes, government-run grocery stores. Think about this one for a moment, right? What if we gave our city government the opportunity to run grocery stores in Midtown? We're kind of short, right? Like, ultimately, we've seen the closure of Johnny Gibson's Market. We've seen the closure of Flores Market Run. We're seeing grocery stores not make it in Midtown. When was the last time we had a, you know, a downtown grocery store in some capacity? So Mr. Mamdani is advocating that they actually take out some of the private sector over here and let the government run grocery stores. Now, mind you, I'm not playing politics on this one over here. I'm not saying, well, because he's a Democrat, he can't run a grocery store. I'm saying the Republicans couldn't run a grocery store either. I'm saying, quite frankly, nobody in the government could run a grocery store. If you've been to government-run restaurants, right? Does this exist? Sort of. Go to a stadium and they've subbed out their food service to, you know, the lowest bidder in some capacity to one of these big national companies. Your airport food from Delaware North. Your stadium food from Aramark, right? Hot nacho, yellow cheese pump nacho. So good. You know, just a James Beard award-winning culinary delight.
Thank you.
What would a government grocery store look like? We're talking about a business model that has a 1% or 2% profit margin on a good day, right, that barely make it on their own, run by very efficient private sector who might own dozens and dozens of grocery stores. The idea that we could possibly do this in Southern Arizona would just be absolutely mind-numbing to me. But it's coming in New York. Mr. Mamdani is going to be the odds-on favorite to win the mayor of New York. It's going to be a three-horse race. There's both a Republican candidate who ran last time unsuccessfully and current incumbent Eric Adams, who's running as an independent. So it'll be an interesting three-horse race. But can they run a government grocery store. I'm fascinated by this one, Matt. I'm kind of shocked by it. I'm really interested to see how this one is going to work out.
The phrase thumb on the scale, you know, sort of comes to mind, like how they manage a lot of projects around here with the various people. So yes.
Yes.
And the produce aisle. Watch out for the thumb on the scale at the kind of changing the reading there at the government-run grocery store.
Unbelievable to think about how that could possibly work. I'm shocked, but we're going to find out because we happen to tail, you know, these things in these more progressive cities by 4 or 5 years. So when this comes up in the next year or two in the city council meeting, somewhere between their declaration about Palestine and whether or not they're going to renew the TEP franchise agreement again, when we've got the city of Tucson run government grocery stores delivered to you by your free bus on Uber Eats, I can't wait to see.
And they're already talking about having a city-run power utility, so it's right in line.
Yes, yeah. And so to take note of that, the TEP franchise agreement vote is on the rocks, right? We've pretty much passed this deadline, according to the city of Tucson, to put this on the ballot in November. And so that franchise agreement, which allows TEP to do things across and on city property without having to get all these permits, and as such, they pay a little over a 2% fee for it, that agreement expires in April of 2026. And so we're getting closer to the city not only running their own power, you know, grid, but also running their own grocery stores. So maybe they can figure out a way to run those refrigerators a little cheaper than the private sector if they do this one on their own. As well, it looks like Sabino Canyon is not for sale after all. Not shocking over here on the news. When this one broke late last week, I thought to myself, this is clickbait, right? There is no way someone is selling.
Had that feel to it, yes.
Sabino Canyon, Mount Lemmon, Madera Canyon in some capacity. But as part of a broader federal sell-off, there was a human possibility that these could have legally been included in this. I didn't think for one second this was actually going to happen. And sure enough, earlier this week, under the Byrd rule, which is sort of a not quite a single subject rule, but a limitation on the reconciliation process of what can be included in there, this entirety of the sell-off of these federal lands has been excluded from that particular Senate vote. And not that this was going to happen anyway, but the newspaper will not be able to scare you into thinking Sabino Canyon is for sale anymore. And one more bit of local news before we take a quick break over here. The NBA draft is tonight. We're really excited to see it. There are two potential Wildcats that could be selected. Carter Bryant expected to be selected in the first round today. And that first round starts at 5 p.m. That's on ABC and ESPN, respectively. We can cheer on Carter Bryant and the Wildcats. And it'll be interesting to see where Wildcats superstar Caleb Love lands as well, too. He could be a first rounder. He could be a second rounder. He may not even get drafted at all. So do turn in and see which future Wildcats become millionaires. Oh, wait a minute. They're already millionaires because of NIL.
Thank you.
Either way. When we come back after the break, we're going to bring on a dynamic pair of restaurateurs. I've got Frida and Charles Hunt, owners and operators of Via Peru, located at River and Campbell. Coming up, don't go anywhere. Lots of restaurant and business news coming up. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. As always, excited to be here with you on Wednesday mornings. You know, at the break, we were talking about getting to go out to cool restaurants in California and New York and see what they're doing well. But I also get an opportunity to go check out really neat restaurants here in Tucson in the Old Pueblo. And just a few weeks ago, my wife and I got the opportunity to go to the new remodeled Via Peru and had an absolutely amazing experience. And I thought to myself, you know what, self? We've got to have these dynamic young operators over here on the radio and talk about their experiences because they've been open a number of years now and have gone through a dramatic remodel and have an amazing product. And so I'd like to welcome to the KVOI studios, Mr. Charles and Mrs. Frida Hunt, owners of Via Peru Restaurant.
Hi, Grant. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, so why don't we break down a little bit about your backstory for our listeners? How did you guys get started in the restaurant business?
Well, actually, my parents are the one that started. They started like 14 years ago. And they started in Phoenix. They had this small diner. It was mom and pop, pretty much. It was the original Via Peru. And I mean, they were there for 6 years. So we traveled back and forth just to help them. And when I moved to America, that's what I did. I actually work at a restaurant. So to me, it was pretty easy to go and help them. But it was also hard because they were in Phoenix. So then we got together as a family and decided to move them back to Tucson. And now we built this beautiful restaurant together as a family. And I mean, we love it. We just expanded. People seem to accept it. Peruvian food is, I mean, it's all over the world. And right now, I think Tucson needed a little bit of us too. So
break down, guys, where Via Peru is located for our listeners over here, for those that don't know, that haven't had the opportunity to go check it out yet.
Hey, Grant. Via Peru is going to be at Campbell and River. We're in a nice plaza, Say Sullivan's, P.F. Chang's, Zen Burger. So it's kind of a foodie plaza right there in the center of town, probably about a mile and a half south of La Encantada. And just north of the university. So we're centrally located. It's a great place to be. And we
That's
really
Joshler Village, right? Yeah. I believe is the name of the shopping center for that one over there.
Yes.
And Choice Greens is over there as well, too.
Choice
now.
Greens as well, yeah.
Yeah, an awful lot of food over there at River and Campbell, for sure. So you guys are essentially my neighbors to the northwest side of Tucson over there. And how many years has Via Peru been now in Joshler Village?
8 years.
8 years. Yeah. That's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, that space before had been Contigo many years ago.
Yes.
And before that, I believe it was Coach's Deli. I'm dating myself on this memory. And I think there was even a small outpost of El Charro Express or something like that there in like the early to mid 2000s.
Yeah. We heard it. I mean, the funny part is like I worked there when it was Contigo back then. It was, I was literally for 3 to 4 months. And it was right before we were getting married and go to Peru. And I was like, I cannot believe we're back in the same spot. So, yeah.
Isn't it funny how things work like full cycle like that?
Oh,
like
gosh,
you were
yes.
like a staff member in that building and now you get to come back and like own it and operate it and run it all together. Fate has an interesting way of circling all these things back like that.
Totally.
So you're from Peru then originally?
Yes. I was born and raised in Peru. Moved here when I was 17 years old.
Oh, wow. So that must have been quite the transition.
It was. It was because I literally, the expectations were like, okay, I know enough English and it was none. So, but I mean, you learn as you go. I worked at a fine dining French restaurant when I moved here. It was Soleil back in the time. And then from there, I fall in love with like the whole like serving and the customer service. And I love the... like the full service, like, you know, the fine dining restaurant, so.
Of course, I love fine dining as well, too. It's kind of sad to see fine dining go by the wayside. It's so difficult and so expensive to execute white tablecloth fine dining these days. You almost don't see it anymore outside of the cocoon of an expensive hotel restaurant that's keeping it as a feather in their cap, perhaps a loss leader in some capacity. I mean, when you think about it, like what fine dining restaurants are even left in Tucson at this point?
Yeah, no, especially after COVID, I feel like a lot of things has cut back. So yeah, I feel it's very hard to find it. Just interaction, just to make sure like everybody's knowledge of what they're, you know, talking and what they're selling and what they're offering. And I mean, given the whole experience to a customer, you don't see it anymore.
No, I agree. So you guys went through a pretty extensive and I'm guessing expensive remodel as well too. For those that had been in the original Contigo space and even the original Via Peru space, it was long and narrow, right? Like kind of a hallway of a location with the bar on the back end on the right-hand side. And you guys recently went through a pretty dramatic expansion. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Well, we had a good relationship with our landlords, the Horvath family. And that's going to be Town West Realty. So we had a partnership. We engaged with them on our lease extension, and we were able to bring this beautiful product, which is Via Peru now. Our signature is going to be Rainbow Mountain hand-painted mural by a local artist from Phoenix. Actually, she was one of our employees, and she's into art in Phoenix. So she came down, painted it up. And then
Peruvian as well.
Yeah, yeah. So all the Peruvian talent together. So then we also have this beautiful Perota wood that lines one of the walls, and then our mesquite wood tables. So that's kind of the theme of how it came back together. It goes perfectly with the tomahawk steaks and our lobster when we serve. Yeah, it works out.
No, this is a beautiful restaurant, Chelsea. You guys have done a really great job on this remodel over here. And it's no small feat to do that, right? To close down and to go through such an extensive and expensive remodel, especially with rising costs. Give me a couple of the challenges that you guys went through on this one.
Oh, well, I mean, we literally thought we had to be, we were going to be fine during summer and doing it. So we're like, fine, so we can be closed for a week. We would end up being closing for almost 2 weeks. We worked through the whole remodeling. We have this beautiful tar there. I mean, it was like a, we call it like a curtain, you know, where the magic was going to happen behind it. But, I mean, it was fun to pick. And it was also a challenge to try to seat people there because of how narrow the restaurant was. So having five tables towards the back where the beautiful cover wasn't and try to seat people on that, it was just like, okay, well, it's just a pick of surprise that was going to happen. And you find people picking through the curtains. But other than that, people seem to understand, you know. It was, you know, it's never the time they told you it's going to be. That's another thing. But, I mean, it's like when you build your house, your restaurant is your second home. So you want everything to be perfect. And, I mean, of course, they say your tables are going to arrive in 2 weeks and arrive in five. And you're like, oh, what am I going to do? We rent chairs. We end up giving the had the tables and the chairs never arrive. And we're
you
like,
had to use rental chairs?
We what? Had to use.
Oh, my goodness. You should have talked to me. I was right across the street. Yeah. I could have lent you a few over here, like borrowing a cup of sugar or something. You
I
know?
Don't think she's like the chaos of actually doing this when, I mean, so we're constructing, we're contracting, we're trying to, you know, navigate our family and trying to operate a restaurant that's under construction. You come in and then there's like dust everywhere. So you have to remove everything from the tables. You got to clean everything again. I mean, like, this is our only restaurant. So like, this is what we do. So we can't stop everything for a long time.
Without a doubt, what a crazy challenge that you guys have gone through with this. And it's an absolutely beautiful remodel for our listeners out there. You absolutely have to go out there and check out the new Via Peru. We're going to take a quick break over here. And we come back, we're going to talk more about the construction challenges of operating your own restaurant and how they built a beautiful, beautiful Peruvian restaurant here in Southern Arizona. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk.
Follow along on Facebook, 1030 The Voice is our page, or YouTube, 1030 The Voice, the page there. You can see your voice. Grant will be right back.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice with your host, Grant Kruger. We are joined for another segment by a dynamic ownership group of the Via Peru restaurant, Mr. Charles and Mrs. Frida Hunt. Welcome back, guys.
Hi.
Hey, before the break, Frida, you were telling us that your family started the original Via Peru in Phoenix about 14 years ago, right? And you're at about year 9 in a family establishment over here. How are the dynamics with working with your parents? Are they in the restaurant still right now?
Yes. They're actually our main chefs. So, I mean, not just that I grew up with them. It is like, you know, mom and dad, they're both in the kitchen. They're both are good in the specific ways. Like my mom is great with her ceviche. My father is good making, you know, the hot dishes. But of course, you're always going to have mom saying like, no, that needs this, that needs that. And you just have to leave them alone. But then, you know, the project is great. They love what they do. And that's why they're so passionate. But yeah, it gets a challenge. Sometimes you have to remind them, hey, we're at the restaurant. We're not home. Stop, you know, arguing with each other, it's okay, or, you know, little simple things that, you know, my mom tend to, everyone in the restaurant, our employees are like their kids, you know, and they walk to him, they're like, oh, you didn't do this, okay, and, like, she's trying to fix them, or give me, you sure, I need to iron this for you, and I'm like, mom, no, you can't.
I don't think I do any ironing in my own place over here. I'm feeling woefully insufficient all of a sudden. I found that the dynamics of family restaurants are often best kept if people sort of work in their lanes, right? You get a wife that's the chef good. And the husband works in the front of house. So while they both work in the restaurant, they at least aren't necessarily the general managers of everything. Is that kind of how you guys are working it then? Mom and dad are making the food, yeah. You guys are running the front?
So I would say that is very wise. If you think about our dynamics, like if you think of an old school Italian restaurant where it's like, it's a big, loud family filled with a lot of love and a lot of throwing things when things don't go our ways, that is pretty much what you have at Via Peru. But the thing is, yeah, you got to stay in your lane. So it's when you start to get out of that, when it becomes a problem. So if Mama, who's the ceviche expert, she starts trying to talk to Papa about the tomahawk steaks, maybe there's going to be some things getting thrown there, and that's pretty much how it goes.
Yes. So we all have our duties, and we all good in what we do. So my, you know, like I say, Mom does ceviches, Dad does the hot stuff. I'm the front of the house. My husband is the operation guy. You know, he told me I execute it. So we all have our inputs in there. So yes, it has to be that way. Otherwise we'll be on top of each other, and that is not good.
Without a doubt, it's no easy feat to run a restaurant. The dynamics, even with one person at the helm, can be challenging. But when you've got a family and everybody wants to be the boss, right, it can become incredibly difficult and incredibly challenging, especially when you take work home with you guys as well too, right?
Yep. Yep, for sure. We learned that.
It's all things restaurant all the time. But the cool thing is, in this business, when you go out, everything is market research. So I think that's the wonderful part about the business.
You're always learning. People always say that, like every time they see me out in another restaurant, hey, checking out the competition, and like a little nug, you know, a little rub over there, a little elbow. And I'm like, I'm just having dinner. It's just Tuesday night. You know, like, I didn't really want to eat at Union 7 days in a row. Like, that doesn't mean it's not a good
Although
place.
The listeners should.
Yes, right? Of course, yes. Listeners, please come to our restaurants here, Via Peru or Union Hospitality.
Our kids eat at Sace. They go next door. They eat at Sace. They're awesome over there. They want to go everywhere but Via Peru because they eat Via Peru every day.
Of course, yeah. Of course. So you guys did such a beautiful remodel to it. I mean, it's over the top. Like, if you haven't had the opportunity to see the new remodeled, redone Via Peru, like, it's something else. Give me, Charles, like, the why. Like, what the... Why did you guys go this deep on the experiential side of Via Peru?
Right on. So I think one of the things that you see with the trend of the business is it goes real casual. And so you just see a lot of fast casual concepts out there. And then when we were dialing in why we get up every day, why we do what we do, for me, it came down to this quote by Jack London. He writes, "A man was not born to exist, but to live. I won't spend my days trying to prolong them. I will use my time." And to me, it speaks to how many of us are kind of always, you know, just droned out on a phone, droned out binge watching, you know, Netflix, and we don't live our life. And so what we offer at Via Peru is where you can come in and have wine, dine, take your wife out, take the family out, and just live and enjoy the moment. And that's, to me, that's what we want to offer. That's the vision of why we do what we do.
I love it. And I think it's such a dichotomy between that and what we're seeing in food service these days. The Angie's lobster rolls, right? The Chop Shops of the world. It's distilled down to a app order. Don't talk to a human being. Drive through. I don't even give you a bathroom. There's no restaurant manager. You might not even get a to-go bag, right? Like, I'm just trying to drill it down to the lowest possible cost. I think in full service restaurants, we've got to do the opposite. We've got to provide an amazing experience, something you can't replicate at home, something you can't do anywhere else. And I think that's something to be said for what you guys are doing over at Via Peru. Like, tell me about your ceviches a bit, right? These are dishes that there's a 0% chance I could replicate at home. Like, what makes the Peruvian ceviche so different?
Well, we love the fish. So fish is our top number thing when we make ceviche. Is the way, it's just sashimi style. You order and they're just going to prepare it. So nothing is set on lime juice, nothing is set on any seasoning. You order, we have, we just right there, we mixed it. our peppers. Our peppers are very important too. So the reason why we do our ceviche festival is just we use different peppers, give different flavors. We use different fish, trying to get South American fish sometimes, like lenguado and corvina. And then right there, you order it and you just have it. It's very fresh. And yes, you grew up with it. So leche de tigre, they call it, a lot of people believe it is milk on the ceviche, but it's not. It's called the tiger's milk because it's a waking up.
Because somebody called it tiger's milk in the jungle. It stayed, but there's no milk. So okay. I don't even know. Do they have tigers in Peru?
In the jungle, you said.
Okay.
I learned something new every day over
it's
here.
It's literally
on the morning
called
voice.
Tiger's milk. There's no milk, but it's the ceviche concentrate. Pours over to ceviche. So like we'll take mahi or a tuna or like she said a covina fish, and then you have the fresh squeezed lime juice, the ceviche concentrate, which is our secret ingredient. It's just a chef's blend, and then there's a little salt and pepper, ricotta pepper, which is the pepper from Peru. We import ají limón, ají amarillo. These are all peppers you can't get here, and these are the secrets to what we do. And you see actually a lot of chefs working with ají amarillo because it's such a good pepper. So as you get into bigger cities, you see that more often. But that's why we were ranked in the top 20 in Yelp. We got
for ceviche restaurants in the entire country, right, Charles?
Yes. And that's on Yelp 2024. And that speaks to the product of what Frida's parents have been able to dial in.
That's amazing. So when you talk about making this difference, right, you're getting ingredients that you just can't order off of the Shamrock Foods truck or the Cisco truck in some capacity. But some of the stuff is imported. Do some of the recent discussions of tariffs worry you in any capacity that you won't affordably be able to bring in ingredients like this?
Yeah, no, we went through that a little bit when COVID was happening. So a lot of our products would stop. Now, I mean, we do import our peppers. We import our corns, we import, there's little things that make the seasoning, it makes very important for our dishes. I don't know, we're just praying that nothing really.
Well, we might put a little garden in the backyard.
That's so an alternative choice right now.
We're gonna get the seeds for ají amarillo.
We're gonna talk to the Horvath family over here and see if we can't just pitch up a community garden on the backside somewhere.
I mean, do a true farm to table from the backyard into the...
Yeah. I mean, that's not a process.
No, I would imagine. And it's something that worries me, even on the Mexican restaurant side, we think of tequilas, right? A product that cannot be produced domestically, right? Like Pisco, for example. Mm-hmm. Like I assume you have to buy that, of course, from a purveyor here in the state of Arizona. But it's something that can't be produced domestically. And so when you think of tariffs, like there are just certain products that there is no alternative choice. If you want that product, you're going to pay. And if there's a 10 or 15 or 25% tariff, then our costs are just going to go up on those, no?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. So, I mean, I hope they figure that out. One of the things we treat that as is because it's so far above our pay grade, so we'll just deal with it as it comes in. But it is something that we're concerned about. Our pisco, we go through pisco like crazy, and that we actually get it from the oldest ranch in North and South America. So a little history tidbit: it's 1684, the Cadavedo family, and that's going to be all our pisco sours out there.
Well, let's talk about that pisco sour after the break when we come back over here. The most noted Peruvian cocktail, sort of the margarita of Peruvian restaurants, as they might say. We're going to have a little more discussion about the restaurant business with Charles and Frida Hunt, owners of Via Peru, located at the northwest corner at River and Campbell. Do go give them a visit. One more segment coming up with Charles and Frida on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We've got one more segment this morning with the owners of Via Peru restaurant, Mr. Charles and Ms. Frida Hunt. Welcome back, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, so before the break, we were talking about the amazing ceviches and how well known you are for these great ceviches. You were rated in the top 20 ceviche restaurants in the entire country by Yelp. So we're pretty lucky to have you guys here in Tucson. But tell me about a few of the other classic Peruvian dishes that you guys make. Like, what should we try if our listeners show up to Via Peru this week?
Well, definitely lomo saltado is one of our number one dish as well. Tenderloin, super, super simple. And Peru has a lot of Japanese influence as well. So they use soy sauce. They saute the tenderloin with tomatoes, onions. We're going to have a red wine production. We're going to have also couple other traditionals like ají de gallinas made with the Peruvian yellow pepper. I mean, we have in our menu, we picked the most popular and the most traditional dishes that we have in Peru. Coming from mom and dad, trying to break the tradition on them is a little hard, but I mean, yes, it just brings you home again.
One of the things we do well is we also do modern fusion on traditional dishes and have created several new ones. And the cool thing is in Peru, the number one restaurant in the world is Mido. It's in Lima. And so you have four of the top 50 restaurants out in Peru, in the whole world. And so there's only one in America that actually made the top 50 list. It's in New York. And so it gives you an idea of how that little country, they cornered a market on cuisine. And so we brought that here to Tucson, and we do a lot of modern takes. For example, we do tomahawk. Our tomahawk's super popular. We do a chimichurri and uchuchiri sauce. When we do a lobster festival, we do lobster tail with a tomahawk. Number one dish, most popular dish in the restaurant.
You guys do a lot of food festivals, though, right? Charles, basically once a month, there's some sort of special going on at Via Peru. What do you guys got coming up?
Well, it's coming up Oyster Festival. So we do Ceviche Festival, which is, we do these festivals once a month or sometimes twice, depend. But this weekend is Oyster Festival. So what we do, the little twist with the oysters, is that we add our ceviches on the oysters. So we add our peppers as well. We start Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We do this, if you haven't had ceviche and you love oyster, you're going to have a double take of what Peruvian food is all about.
So, love it. We'll have to come check that one out for Oyster Fest just this weekend coming up over there.
Just this weekend.
And Matt, you got a question?
And I'd just like to congratulate you, both of you, on the social media program, the videos you show, the cooking up the rotisserie chickens and whatever. I started noticing a lot during the pandemic. And so you guys do a really nice job on your social media. So if you want to follow these folks on Facebook, they'll show you the food, and they'll show you, if that doesn't make you want to come in and have a bite, I think it will.
I love it. Thanks for bringing that up over there, Matt. So you guys have done really well over at Via Peru. Would you consider other restaurants? You got any other restaurant concepts baking up over here in the oven?
Yes. We're always looking to expand. One of the ideas right now is in the Phoenix area. That's a possibility. And also getting another concept going here in Tucson. I will just say, just keep an eye on our social media. Keep an eye with being in contact with us. And we may have something for you soon.
I love it. A little teaser over there. There's something coming. I couldn't pull it out of Charles this morning, but maybe after a pisco sour or two. Break down your pisco sour cocktail for me over here.
Oh, the most traditional cocktail in Peru. That is your welcome drink. Pisco is made out of grapes. Believe it or not, it's made out of grapes. We actually squeeze fresh lime juice, a little simple syrup, and egg wine for just proteins. I'm just kidding. But that's how we make our Peruvian. It's kind of like the margarita for Mexicans. Pisco for us is just our number one liquor. And pisco sour is so easy to drink and it's so yummy. So if you come to Via Peru, you're going to have the whole experience. Pisco, ceviches, we have steak, we have tomahawk, lobster, and now oyster.
Amazing. It's a great restaurant for sure. And the remodel is just spectacular. For those that haven't had a chance to see this one, do get out there and go check out Via Peru. Break down, Frida, where are your socials for us? Where can we find you? Where can our listeners engage with Via Peru Restaurant?
Yeah, well, we are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. I would say my husband is great doing all social media. So we're trying to be live. I'm lacking on that, but we're trying to be live as much as we can. But yeah, no, we have, you will see our whole family, even our kids, part of our videos, our friends. All our friends, they love it. They're like, oh, we're going to be in the social media. And yes, you can find us on Instagram as Via Peru Tucson. So is in Facebook the same way. And that's the way we communicate with everybody. If when festivals are coming up or anything special going on, I like to go out there and talk about what's happening.
What are the hours of Via Peru?
We're closed on Mondays. Tuesday to Thursday, we're going to be 4 to 9 p.m. Friday, Saturday, we're 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. And then Sunday, we are noon to 8 p.m. So it varies a little bit, but we find ourselves, you got to take your wife out on a date. We're the place to go. And you
I can confirm the accuracy of that statement, having taken my wife out on a date, if you're listening, Katarina.
This is the place to be.
Yes, they did. They did. I actually got to see them. And yes, you're going to get to see our whole family. You're going to get to engage. And we love to the fact that you have that community. You know, it's not just the food. It's what we bring to it. You know, you're going to see our family. You will see us. We love to have the connection with you guys. So Via Peru is just not, it's not just our food, which is awesome. It's great. You're going to have the best time, but it's also to know who we are. And I love to engage with all of you. If you're there, you will see us. And if I get to see people sometimes, like, oh, I saw your video, and I'm like, okay, which video? But this part of the business. But yeah, I love to be able to interact with all of you, with the customers.
Well, and not just that, it's you don't have to go to Peru and shell out $5,000. Just come to Via Peru for a taste of Peru at dinner.
I love it. Charles, Frida, thank you so much for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us and teaching us a little bit about Via Peru.
Thank you for having us.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to break down all kinds of restaurant news after the break over here at the top of the hour. There are big things going on in the culinary scene of the Old Pueblo. Hour two of the Morning Voice coming up.
If you'd like to follow on Facebook, 1030 The Voice is the page, or on YouTube, 1030 The Voice, also the page. We're broadcasting on both of those platforms this morning. And if you just need a quick link to that, go to kvoi.com and check out the little icons at the top of the page.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We've got a great second hour coming up for you over here. Mr. Daniel Gutierrez, congressional candidate for CD7, is going to call in around the 8:15 hour or so. But first, we're going to break down some really heavy-hitting culinary news that's happened over the last 6 days since I've got to spend time with you here on The Morning Voice. Probably one of the tougher weeks in the restaurant business we've had in some time, and I'm here to talk about it with you. First and foremost, on Tanga Verde, Zona 78 has announced that they're closing. The longtime staple that's been around for really a couple decades at this point, owned by the same family that had owned and operated the Hacienda del Sol, had two locations of Zona 78 at one point, one on River Road and Stone area that turned briefly into a concept called Stray Dogs. But the east side Zona 78 has been around for a long time, and they're closing down this summer and going through a little bit of a rebirth. Zona 78 is going to reopen up as Figs Oven and Enoteca, and that's a wine bar, more or less. And so that family ownership has announced that changeover.
So it's more of a rebrand than it's a closing of Zona 78, but a rebrand of the property by the same owners. That's kind of the...
Correct. The family, Kevin Fink, right, that's sort of the chef, the son of the owner that's gone off now to national acclaim, opened up a number of his own very successful restaurants in Austin. He's got a great concept called Emmer and Rye down there, and another one called Hestia as well, too. And in fact, Kevin was nominated for the James Beard Award for, I want to say 2019, man. It was about 5 or 6 years ago, right before COVID. He got a James Beard nomination. Didn't win, but still a nomination, which is pretty cool. Those are the Oscars of cooking for
sure.
Those taking notes at home. But nonetheless, a sad day to think that, you know, a casual, family-friendly East Side pizza location not making it. They're going to try to take this one a little bit more upscale is what that name rings out to me as Figs Oven and Enoteca. So keep an eye out for that one. Number two on our closing list, unfortunately, today on It Bleeds, It Leads over here in your restaurant news is Paria Suiza. The location on Oracle is now, on South Oracle, like in the 85705 area, is now surrounded by a giant construction fence. Listeners sent in a number of pictures to me to that one. It's been closed for probably a week and a half or so now. And that doesn't look like that one's coming back anytime soon at this point. I understand.
Long time place.
Right. This is an OG restaurant in Tucson for sure. Yeah. And so it's really sad to see that outpost of the Paria Suiza closing down as well, too.
Still on Speedway, though.
Yes.
What's that cross street is not...
is it like Columbus, I want to say? Yeah, on the south side over there. They still do have that location. But nonetheless, the continued difficultness in that 85705 area just, you know, continues to pass on its hurt onto the businesses when the unhoused community tends to break into restaurants like this and just in general cause a lot of uncomfortable situations that I think is a scary place for diners to go. We saw Chinito Gordo close down in that same location only a few weeks ago, we mentioned on this show. And yet another victim to the 85705 with Pizzeria Suiza closing down as well. And somewhat shocking news, Wero Canelo announcing the closure of their OG store on South 12th Avenue as well, too.
Yeah.
Hopefully, like Zona 78, there's going to be some sort of rebirth, some phoenix from the ashes on this one. Mm-hmm. They've hinted there may be another location on the south side somewhere. I don't have any confirmation.
Boy, the place on 22nd seems to be just doing great.
They've got two other locations, one on 22nd and one on North Oracle Road, like just north of Grant Road. Both of those locations are still going to stay open. But the original, right, the Wero Canelo that like caused those, you know, TV shows with the fights between BK and Wero Canelo, like the original one is closing. And that's kind of heartbreaking because like those sort of histories, like those little food fights, which one do you love more? You know, like you can't be a real Tucsonan if you haven't picked between Wero Canelo and BK in some capacity over here. To see the original one go out of business, in spite of its somewhat wonkiness and obviously outdated location, that's part of the charm, right?
It was, man. You go in there and you're thinking, I'm eating in a tent, and you walk in there, the place was always meticulously clean, and you're right, charm is the right word. It just had a neat vibe to it.
And I think, you know, I want my OG Mexican restaurants to be like that, too, you know? Like, I want to go to the South Side and have that experience.
It's obvious that they've just kind of grown, they'd kind of expanded it in a modular sense, and it worked. It worked.
And so in other restaurant news, other closings popped up over here. Another Oracle closing, Golden Dragon, which is located at the 6400 block of Oracle in Orange Grove, a place where I've spent many a Christmas, right? Me and other, I guess, Jewish people tend to eat out on Christmas, right? Chinese, it's a busy day if you've ever been to Golden Dragon on Christmas. I often only visited that establishment at that time, and perhaps others did too. They've announced the closing of that particular location as well, too. And so quite a bit of closures popping up this week in the Old Pueblo. And it kind of makes me sad. But again, we called this one, you know, weeks in advance saying when you get to the start of the summer season, this is when restaurants are going to announce their changeovers and figure out ways to either rebrand or retool or just close down and give somebody else an opportunity to go at that market. And there are, on the positive news side of things, some restaurants opening as well, too. First and foremost, in that particular Golden Dragon location, the Hungry Fox has announced that they're going to open up location number 2. And they're going to build a Hungry Fox at Oracle and Orange Grove in that exact same location. Again, northwest corner of Oracle and Orange Grove, same shopping center as where the Parish is. Mm-hmm. For those that are keeping score, we're going to get a Hungry Fox over there, which I'm pretty excited about to see their growth. They've been around for decades and decades. It's kind of surprising to see them grow now, right? Like it seems a little late to the party, but I love it. That's super cool.
It's good for them.
Also coming on the east side, the Anchor Bar. Buffalo Bills fans rejoice. The former Brushfire Barbecue, also known as a video rental store that had been for many years before at 22nd and Colb, a big, big location, right? I thought that was pretty big for a barbecue restaurant when Brushfire went there years ago, has announced an Anchor Bar location coming in. The Anchor Bar happens to have its roots in Buffalo, New York, and their claim to fame is that they invented in the mid-1960s the Buffalo wing, right? They, in the same way that we say in Tucson, right, El Charro invented the chimichanga, sort of by accident, right? Monica Flynn dropping this burrito in the deep fryer. They've got a similar story about the Buffalo wing. And so they're a huge Buffalo Bills fan-based bar that specializes in wings. They're promising 58 TVs they're dropping in that location. So this is going to be your newest, latest, greatest establishment to watch the Buffalo Bills lose at least 4 Super Bowls in a row.
I was trying to work a Super Bowl joke into the conversation, and you beat me to it. So congratulations.
Right, and so this will be the secret sauce of their wings will be the Buffalo Bills fans' tears, of course, dripping into the Frank's Red Hot and butter, adding a salinity
to the wings that can't be found in other cities with more successful football teams. But we're actually really excited to see the Anchor Bar come to Tucson. It does happen to be a bit of a chain these days. There are 17 other locations of Anchor Bars throughout the United States. So we're going to get number 18 over here in Tucson sometime this fall as they work on that tenant improvement. Speaking of tenant improvements, we've been sharing notes on Ed Irving Slice and Ice for some time over here. And they're opening delayed yet again by another robbery, right? The back door broken into and a large portion of copper wire was stolen from Slice and Ice. Continuing this problem that we also have on Tanga Verde, whose location near that wash.
Tanga Verde and Sabino Canyon has really become a nexus of bad things happening. And this is just the latest installment. It was an old EG's location he's moving into. I can't wait to have to hit Slice and Ice. So thanks to whoever delayed that for a couple months by stealing all the copper out of his kitchen. But yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff going around, attacks at bus stops and thefts and this kind of thing going on. Well, you know, it's related to drug addict. Homeless folks, I think. It's sure what it looks like.
Copper theft causing us to a delay on Slice and Ice. We're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait another month or two to get our watermelon Slice and Ice in some capacity on the east side. A really unfortunate thing. I had a break-in.
Ed Irving. We love you.
I had a personal break-in as well, too, this week. As I've said on this show before, I've been trying for the better portion of a year to develop in some capacity a restaurant at the former Chase Bank location at Grant and Campbell. And that restaurant was broken. Let me rephrase this. That former bank that could be a restaurant was broken into this week and had all of its copper stolen out as well, too. Empty buildings tend to have an insurance premium increase of up to 100% for those that have never paid for commercial insurance before, because the chance of break-ins, particularly in southern Arizona, is so high that we've had basically a Chase Bank robbery and a former EG's location.
It's not even a bank anymore, and it still gets robbed.
Yes. The irony does not escape me. You were a little late to that party over here.
Well, why do you think the county put up a big, beautiful fence around, a big, beautiful wall around the building that they were doing the migrant welcoming facility or something over at Drexel and I-19, because they knew as soon as it became vacant, it was going to be like a scrapyard for people to steal things out of, like copper.
Correct. Maybe that's why the county kept that big giant bowling alley wall too in front of Pintudas's old bowling alley on their new community center.
But they took that building down, the whole thing.
They kept the wall though as well too, right? That bowling alley.
The $40 million wall, lava rock wall. Yes,
and so perhaps that was used to protect them from copper theft. So that they didn't become victims to the same problem that we had at Slice and Ice this week that former Chase location. Certainly both heartbreaking and continuing to show the struggle that is created for small businesses in southern Arizona when we don't address this homeless situation, right? When we let this continue to fester, this becomes the crime tax. This becomes the thing that costs all of us infill development. And it's why we end up with just more and more 24-hour smoke shops and less locally owned restaurants and coffee shops that you would love to see pop up. And speaking of last one over here of locally owned coffee shops, the Sonoran House Coffee on 6th Street has opened up as of Monday this week. Sonora House was located on Tucson Boulevard. And they're opening up an outpost in the former Flores Market location. And that has opened up on Monday. So you've got a chance right now to go check that out. That's Tucson and 6th, Sonora House Coffee. We wish them a tremendous amount of success over here as well, too, as opening up in the summer is no small feat. They're opening up in a former grocery store location. We're hoping the city will not try to open their own outpost of grocery store locations. Let's take a quick break over here, and we should have Mr. Daniel Gutierrez, Republican candidate for Congress, CD7, coming up after the break. So many things going on in the old Pueblo over here today. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. You know, in The Morning Voice, we love small business owners and having talks with them. And when we get an opportunity to meet with a small business owner that's also putting their neck out on the line to run for politics, well, that's something special over there. That's something that we should all be celebrating, those individuals that are willing to take that personal and financial risk. And we happen to have a guest on the line right now from the calling into the KVUI studios who's doing just that. Mr. Daniel Gutierrez, candidate for congressional seat 7 in Southern Arizona, is calling in. Welcome, Daniel.
Good morning, Grant. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us here on The Morning Voice, sir.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, so I know that ballots got mailed out for this election last week already. This election, for those that don't know, happens to be on July 15th, but ballots were mailed out on June 18th. So we don't just have election day over here anymore, huh, Daniel? We've got election month.
Exactly. Yeah, we're down to like 3 months till the actual election day, so...
Correct. But a lot of people are saying that this race could even be decided in some way, shape, or form by the Democrat primary, that whoever wins this would be the strong favorite. But on a national level, we've seen a shift over to the right. What do you think your chances are right now of winning both this Republican primary and the race?
I actually think it's going to be a complete upset. I don't know if you know, I got like 20,000 Democrats voted for me last time, and I've got a lot more behind me this time. So,
well, you got almost 100,000 votes in the last CD7 election. For those that don't know, Daniel was the Republican candidate in November of 2024, so he's no stranger to this race. He ran against Raul Grijalva, and 100,000 votes is about as many votes as the entirety of the city of Tucson that voted in, say, the mayoral race. So that's no small feat to have 100,000 people in Southern Arizona put a checkbox next to your name, sir.
Yep. No, it was pretty amazing. I actually, Pozzolo had run the year before, and I had voted for him, and I was hoping he'd win because I really didn't want to be a politician. But he got like 62,000 votes in CD7, and I got 59,000 in Pima County alone.
Right, and nearly 100,000 total, which is pretty impressive. CD7, however, is more than just Pima County, right? Give me a little bit of breakdown about how big CD7 is.
Well, CD7 stretches from Yuma to Douglas, up into Tolleson and Avondale, a big chunk of Tucson, the lower part of Tucson. So it's a huge district. It's almost the entire southern border, except like 30-something miles that Juan Siskamani has.
No, this is a big swath of the state of Arizona, and I believe it incorporates 5, if not 6 counties in some capacity, correct?
Yeah, 6 counties.
Counties, that's...
Yuma, Maricopa, Pinal, Pima, Santa Cruz, and Cochise.
That's amazing. So Daniel, why run? You've got your own small business, right? Gutierrez Painting, and you're also involved in a horse rescue organization as well, too. Like, give me the why for running for politics.
Well, I've been watching our city go further and further to the left, more and more socialist. And now it's on the verge of just becoming straight out communist. And I stepped in because I wanted to put an end to that. And I just came to realize that it had to be someone that was born here in Tucson, someone that knew the people here in Tucson, because if you don't win Pima County, you can't win this race. So I decided to get in there and throw my hat into the ring. And it appears that I was correct. And I'm the only one running in this race on the Republican ticket that actually even lives in the district, so.
Right. I did find that an interesting fact. I saw that one in the news that the other candidates don't. Now, in fairness, on a federal level, you technically don't have to live in your district to run there. Ann Kirkpatrick was criticized for that for years ago. And Eli Crane, for example, who's in CD2, I believe doesn't actually live in CD2. He lives in Oro Valley, correct?
Correct. That the difference between that and this one And you are correct. You don't have to live in the district. One of my opponents, apparently when he first filed, thought he had to because he actually put that he lived on Miracle Mile on his petition, on his intent to run, when he in fact lived in Catalina, which shows that he, you know, it's kind of dishonest. Well, it is dishonest, but the problem is it doesn't matter if it's legal or not. Tucson, the South Tucson is a very old community and an old district, and they're not going to vote for someone that's not part of their community.
Without a doubt, I think there's something to be said for being part of your community. And that's part of where I think small business owners often are part of our communities, right? Like you hire locals and your money sticks around locally over here. And they're the kind of individuals I'd love to see run more in politics rather than having so many social activists. If you look at the current makeup of our city council, of our board of supervisors right now, the grand majority of them are social activists, people who have generally signed the back of a paycheck and not the front side.
Right. And that's the absolute truth. And when I get up against the Democrats, I'm whoever it is, that's exactly what I'm going to run about, you know, point out. These people have built nothing. I built a small company from nothing into what it is, and now I sign checks for the people in our community. These people running against me have never owned a business, never built anything. They have existed and lived off of the taxpayers of Arizona. So,
without a doubt. Now, traditional logic would think that you would be the hands-on favorite to win this Republican primary. It's a three-horse race over here. You certainly got to have the name recognition, having run in the last election. There might even be some thought of just kind of breaking out your old signs and dusting them off and putting them right back out there. Did you have to change anything on those?
I didn't change anything on my signs. As a matter of fact, I ordered up another 100 of my 4x8s, which have the American flags and the Arizona flag flying from them. And then I ordered up 200 of my 4x4s. And I've actually had people tell me they were voting for me just because of the picture on my 4x4 because I'm wearing my cowboy hat.
Sure. There's something to be said for that with that constituency in CD7 being located where you said it was. I think a cowboy hat carries some weight there, sir.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I did an awesome commercial, which has been running all over in the south side of Tucson and up in Santa Cruz and those areas, Nogales, where it's a one-minute commercial, and it shows my connection with the community, having been born and raised here.
Are you spending big money right now on the primary, or are you confident you're going to win this one and saving up to go at the Democrat in the general?
Well, I've spent some money in the primary. Granted, I didn't have to spend that much because I was already known, and I don't plan to spend any more. I have a feeling that I've already won the race because I've locked up Yuma. I've locked up Pinal. I'm pretty sure Maricopa's locked up, and I'll win Tucson.
Is there
the only thing, Mike? Yeah. Well, the only thing that the candidates that the one hasn't. I actually sat and had breakfast with him. Spent 3 hours with one of them. Nice guy. The other one, the him and his supporters, which all live in CD6, by the way, have done nothing but slander me and attack me and spread lies everywhere about me. And I just kind of ignore it because they may get some people to say, hey, I'm not going to vote for them, but they're not going to stop me from winning this. So.
Well, I watched that Republican debate as well, too, and I'd love to talk about that one after the break over here. We're going to have to take a quick break for CBS News. You got time to stick around for another segment with me and break down that
yep.
Republican debate a bit?
Absolutely.
I love it. We're talking to Daniel Gutierrez, Republican candidate for Congressional District 7. He's got an election on July 15th, but those ballots are already out in your mailboxes right now. In just the next few days, we've got more heavy-hitting questions and discussions with Daniel coming up on The Morning Voice after the break.
Follow along on Facebook or YouTube. 1030 The Voice is the name of the channel on either platform, and we're broadcasting there. And you can still listen to us on your radio. We're easy that way. Morning Voice will be right back.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., you get The Morning Voice. Miss Lydia Aranda on Mondays. On Tuesdays, The Engagement Hour with Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. On Wednesdays, you get me, Grant Kruger. Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance. And of course, on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley talking all sorts of neat things about the University of Arizona. If you want to meet us, if you want to have a cocktail with us tomorrow at the Casa del Rio Mexican Restaurant on 22nd at 5:30 p.m. You can throw a chimichanga at me and tell me why I don't know what I'm talking about. But right now, back in the KVUI studios, we've got someone that does know what he's talking about. Congressional candidate for CD7, Mr. Daniel Gutierrez. Welcome back, Daniel.
Glad to be back.
Hey, so before the break, we were talking about a debate that happened on the second week of June, and the gloves came off a little bit there in the Republican primary. There is a three-horse race over here, and they took a couple pot shots at you for not speaking Spanish as well as they thought a candidate should. Wait, tell me about that one a little bit.
The one thing that the individual had gotten in the race, he thought he could do really good because he speaks Spanish and I don't. And though it is a plus, it is not something that really is going to make that much of a difference. The thing that matters the most is how well you speak English, because that's what they speak in Washington.
True point indeed, sir. And I noted on our show last week that I don't believe that Adelita Grijalva speaks Spanish all that terribly well either, having heard her go through a bit of this. Like I certainly don't think that that's a prerequisite for the job in the United States Congress.
No, and it would be nice if I did speak a little more, and I'm slowly working on that, spending time with, well, as you've seen, Leticia Ortiz is a big-time supporter of mine, and she is also a Democrat.
Without a doubt. And Leticia is a force, right, in the Hispanic community here in Tucson, as both a media presence and an event organizer as well, too. And I've got to see you at a number of events out here. Like, you are really hitting the ground running. Where are you getting the energy to run a small business and run for Congress at the same time, sir?
Well, I actually have an amazing son. He's junior. And he has stepped up and picked it up really quick and is running both companies. So it's pretty nice to have a son I can count on.
Oh, without a doubt. Family business can be a difficult challenge. We talked about that with Frida and Charles Hunt, owners of Via Peru Restaurants, at the first hour on The Morning Voice over here. But it's awesome to have Junior helping keep an eye on the fort for you, because you must be out there every single day pounding the ground, no? Knocking doors, shaking hands, and kissing babies?
Absolutely. And back to that debate, I just want to make sure that everyone understands. I did the first one with PBS, which was just a straight setup so that the Democrats have something to use on us later. But that one, I didn't attack my opponent whatsoever. And at the end, he came out and straight up attacked me and Mr. Grijalva. Though Mr. Grijalva and I have nothing in common, he deserved respect. So on the second debate, I came out swinging to get back at Jorge for attacking me in the first one when I hadn't attacked him at all. And at the closing, I gave my closing up to give respect to Grijalva, just because he did serve 50 years for our community. So.
Of course, and you have to appreciate and respect people, no matter what side of the line they line up here politically, for giving that much of their life to public service. They may disagree with you and I about how big our government should be, how much benefits there should be out there, what our tax rates should be, but that's why we live in a democracy and have the opportunity to vote in this representative democracy for people to represent us in Congress. And these are your first runs in politics, correct?
Oh, yeah, and I'm learning a lot. I mean, the media, you can't trust them. I mean, the papers, anyways, they
those morning radio hosts, they're straight shooters with upper management potential written all over them, right?
Clearly.
It's the print guys.
Well, the radio host, that's another whole story because, I mean, everyone can hear what you're saying. But you do an interview with a reporter, and I give you some examples. And if you go out and look at AZ Luminary, they did correct their article on me three times, and it's still not acceptable. But then I saw the Tucson Citizen yesterday, and I had done an interview with Jim Nitzel.
Uh-huh.
And he put this out on the 9th, and I'm reading it, and he put me out as a felon, a convicted felon. I'm not a convicted felon, and it wasn't my opinion that I was wrongfully convicted. It was the state of Arizona and Judge Jeffrey T. Bergen's opinion that I was not guilty. So,
correct.
They put it out, and they left it that I was a convicted felon.
So let's segue into that uncomfortable topic of conversation over here, because you've been very open about your past and said, hey, I've learned a lot from these particular mistakes. And I think in America, we're a country that's willing to forgive and move forward. And you even had these charges voided against you in the same way that perhaps Sean Miller had charges for paying an athlete at one point, you know, basically voided because it's no longer illegal anymore. Would you consider that to be a parallel with what happened in your case, sir?
No, actually, mine's way different. I was never convicted in the first place. And that's why Jeffrey Bergen, he didn't void it. He found it void.
Interesting.
And the state came out and they ruled that they admitted that it looked like I was convicted of a crime I didn't commit, and they chose not to dispute my motion. Judge Bergen, that opened the door for Judge Bergen to come in and say, okay, well, the state admits he was convicted of a crime he did not commit. The court further finds, because there was more in my motion, I filed that I was not given a trial, I was not charged for a crime, it was all in my motion, and Judge Bergen went, so the court further finds that there's not a conviction in the first place.
The media really railroaded you here then, too, and kind of painted this as a convicted felon, which is a really unfair depiction of what happened in this situation. And again, I laud you for being so open about this one that, like, at no point have you tried to occult this in your past in any way, shape, or form.
Well, if you excuse me, Daniel, this is Matt, and they want the two words convicted felon because that was the whole narrative against Trump. So they want those two words next to each other. I'm just telling you, it fits the narrative they're trying to push. Republican, convicted felon.
It was bad. They came out and hit one of them who is on probation, federal probation. I guess one of the candidates is on federal probation. And then they said, I have this criminal history too, and they made it really bad, and I don't have a criminal history. My record's clean. That's why I have my CCW.
Right. You wouldn't be able to get that with a felony hanging on you in some capacity over here as well, too.
Right.
And again, we're all allowed to learn from our mistakes and to grow. I have lots of small business owners that we interview regularly here on The Morning Voice, Daniel, and almost all of them started as a dishwasher or a busboy or a line cook or a waitress somewhere. Like, that doesn't mean that they can't grow or learn from those and blossom into dynamic business owners and do great things. Like, just because you started somewhere, even at the bottom, doesn't mean you can't work your way up to the top. It's one of the great things about the United States.
Exactly.
So ultimately, there was a little more punching below the belt than I would have liked to have seen in that Republican primary, Daniel, in that Republican debate. And I always worry on the ER side, we tend to tear each other down like this in the primary, and then we send our candidate into the general, potentially wounded in some capacity, either financially to have to spend a lot of their campaign monies on this, or in terms of reputation, particularly when the media beats up on you because they're waiting for those sound bites. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that you might have really been set up by PBS in some capacity to have some sound bites to be used against you later in the general.
Yep. And I expect a lot of them to come back. And I guess I will deal with that at that time. But I really think Adelita's going to be in a particular situation with me because she knows all about my case and my criminal case because she was on the board of supervisors when they wrote me a check for $25,000. So she is behind this.
Acutely familiar. You know? Well, let's take it one more quick break, Daniel. You got six more minutes to stick with me. I know you've got a 9 o'clock as well, too, but yep. We can wrap up the show before nine. We're going to have one more segment with Daniel Gutierrez, Republican candidate for CD7. We're having a great talk over here on The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We're joined for one final segment by congressional candidate for Congress in CD7, Mr. Daniel Gutierrez. Welcome back, Daniel.
Hey, I'm here.
Hey, so that election is coming up for you guys. It's a special election for those that don't know that will be on September 23rd. Our primary is on the 15th of July, and this is an off-cycle election because of the death of the incumbent. These dates weren't picked by the city to, in any way, shape, or form, slip one past the goalie. This was just statutorily how and where we're going to have an election to replace a congressperson. And Daniel, you've got over at 100,000 votes the last time around. So you're no stranger to this political process.
Nope, not at all.
And so if you win this primary, how does your campaign change? You've got a pretty short run between the primary and the general, with the dates only being between July 15th and September 23rd. What's your game plan for the next month?
To keep doing what I'm doing, but I will be running some television ads because I have money set aside for that. But I'm going to continue focusing on the people I'm focusing on over in the South, Tucson. We painted a church over off of 12th. We did about $30,000 worth of work. Had 12 companies I brought together to upgrade and remodel this church. And that was a major impact in South Tucson because they hadn't had anybody step in like me, a politician, come in and do something for South Tucson in decades, ever probably. And I stepped in, and now it's a beautiful church, and the church is all behind me. I walk into restaurants over in South Tucson, everybody knows me. So that. And they think that's Adelita's voting block. I think I've removed that from her. So
you've mentioned Adelita's name specifically a few times, but she's got a 5-horse race as well, too. I mean, there's a pretty loaded up Democrat primary over here. Do you think she's the front runner to win that Democrat primary and be your candidate or the candidate running against you in September?
Like I thought from the gate, and I just got done looking at some polls. You know, I'd much rather have someone like Daniel Hernandez in there because he's a little, he at least will represent everybody. Adelita's not going to represent everybody. She's only going to represent the far left. She won't represent anybody else, and she's got a proven track record of not representing everybody. But the polls showed that she's way up in front of the polls. And from the gate, when everybody was trying to get in the race, I pretty well called it. It's going to come down to the hometown boy against the hometown girl.
Without a doubt. And if elected, you would essentially be a Republican congressman with a slight advantage, as opposed to if a Democrat wins that seat, they'd be playing from a disadvantage and in the minority. Do you support the current big, beautiful bill and what was passed by House Republicans with only a one-vote majority right now today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I as a business owner, I know part of what's in that, as you do too, is the continued tax break for us small businesses, which is a tremendous help to us. And what it's done is it's trying to cut the waste and fraud that's been happening for decades in our country.
Oh, there's some tremendous things in this for small business people, right? The continuation of the qualified business income deduction over there, 199A, and as well, like this modified accelerated depreciation to where you could fully depreciate large capital expenditures in that same year of where the expense was incurred, rather than from an accounting perspective, dragging out this expense over a number of years. These sort of things help stimulate investment in small business and in the economy in general, no?
Absolutely. And what people don't understand, people like the Adelita believes in less tax businesses. Well, let me tell you, when you increase the tax on a business, we lose profit because we have to raise our prices to cover the taxes. So we wind up getting less business, which means we make less profit. And it's the profit that the government gets to tax. So they get less taxes back. But if you reduce the taxes and we can cut our products prices, we wind up bringing in more customers, making more money, which they tax, and they wind up with more money.
Spoken like a true Republican there for sure, sir. So where can our listeners engage with you? Like, where can we find out information about your campaign? And do you have any events coming up where people could meet or greet you?
My manager sets all that up, but you can follow me on Facebook. We always post our events on Facebook. They're also posted on my webpage, which is ButerisForCongress.org. You can go to my webpage and follow me there. I have all my endorsements are there, and I've got endorsements coming in like every day, it seems like, so.
And is that the number four or F-O-R, just for our listeners over there?
F-O-R.
F-O-R.
It's, Buteris, F-O-R, Congress.org.
ButerisForCongress.org is the place to hang out with Mr. Daniel Gutierrez over here. We appreciate you coming to spend part of your Wednesday with us and take a little bit of time off the campaign trail. I want to wish you a tremendous amount of success in this special election whose primary is coming up on July 15th. Thank you again, Daniel, for coming to spend part of your Wednesday with us.
All right. Thank you, Grant. And I'll probably see you over at Reforma.
Looking forward to seeing you over there sometime soon, sir. Thank you again and best of luck out there on the campaign trail. Listeners, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday with us. We got another great conversation with local business owners and local politicians over here. I love being able to have that combination of the two on The Morning Voice. Looking forward to hosting you guys next Wednesday, July 2nd. Don't go anywhere. Kathleen Wynn and China Watch coming up after the break. It's been a wonderful morning with you on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk.